In front of Gucci in the winter, I see you with your girls. Walking, in your chinchilla fur. I was laid up in the cool back shade. Looking at your face just pure with no makeup. A little bit of MAC lip gloss. Hair in a bun, well done. Looking for a ring, I see none. So I hopped out the coupe and hot the soup is stopping. Introduced like I'm shining. You my destiny. In your diamond cluster, too much just to touch you. Perfume down to your structure. Think I wait till a second.
This is Robin, the program manager at CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco, the best astronomy program on the planet.
Put it in your purse and call.
On the telephone, she heard my voice. Tell me to pick her up in my Rolls Royce. If my Rolls Royce is not for ladies, then girl, I'm gonna take you in my Mercedes. If my Mercedes would have full up a disease, then girl, I'm gonna take you in my Firebird. If my Firebird cannot pay the curve, girl, put your ass on the dumb at your butt.
You're getting closer. My player days is over. Well, maybe not completely, but still in all. Come here, let's see a hug on my bed. And let me get between your legs. Lay on your back, take it from the back. Like a bag you're supposed to. I know you like that. Scream with the neighbors when they sleep.
Oh, this is Marco. Welcome. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9. Well, it's July, and we're as far away from the sun as we're going to get. And in the winter, we get closer. So that has nothing to do with the temperature that we feel, does it? Because you think if we're closer to the sun, it would be warmer, but we're closer to the sun in the winter. So pretty soon, we're moving farther and farther away from our sun in our orbit, in our elliptical orbit. Well, welcome. I was looking at different articles. There was a neutron star article. There was something about a brown dwarf. And there was something about a Kuiper Belt object in our solar system. And what was so interesting is it passed in front of a distant star. So that's called an occultation. So it occults, O-C-C-U-L-T-S, the star. The star dimmed slightly. But it wasn't in another solar system. It wasn't like a planet from that star that occulted it. It was a Kuiper Belt object. It's maybe a dwarf planet. It's like a, maybe like a Pluto. It's called 2014 MU69. I think that's what the New Horizon mission is going to fly to on its next target after it a year and a half ago it flew by Jupiter. So we have an occultation report. It's more than 4 billion miles from Earth, and it passed in front of a star. It doesn't say how far the star was, but scientists were ecstatic to see it because it probably looked pretty cool. Okay, so their goal was to spot the shadow of the mysterious Kuiper Belt object, and they did. They saw it. So this Kuiper Belt object, New Horizons, will arrive at 2014 MU69. It will arrive there on New Year's Day 2019. So in about 2 years and 4 or 5 months. So that's pretty exciting. I'm not going to read the whole article. I saw something else. I think this is interesting what I do sometimes. I come here and I just sample some articles and I just choose one and I read from that article. It's spontaneous and I don't prepare, so it's kind of fun. It puts me on the spot. So here's one from technology.org. I didn't look at nasa.org, but the same article is probably there. We're talking about a brown dwarf. Well, what's a brown dwarf? A brown dwarf is a failed sun. Let's call it that, a failed star. It had mass, a lot more mass than Jupiter. And there's speculation if Jupiter was maybe 10 times bigger, I'm not sure the exact number, it could have formed into a small star. So the reason an object forms into a star is it gathers dust and gas together, and the dust and gas attracts each other. Maybe something will start to collapse, but it collapses in on itself. And it, if there's enough mass like our sun, it will keep squeezing. And when it squeezes, it raises the pressure in the center. And when the pressure goes up, the temperature goes up. And when the temperature reaches something like 10 million degrees, there's fusion. So hydrogen starts to fuse. But what happens with a brown dwarf? It's not massive enough to form a small star. It could be pretty close to a very small star, but a brown dwarf is a failed star, let's call it that. So they spotted a brown dwarf, and a citizen science did it. A citizen scientist. So many NASA projects, like this one called NASA Funded Backyard World, Planet 9. So they're looking for Planet 9. They believe there could be a planet or an object big enough to be called a planet beyond the orbit of Jupiter. But when they did this, they found a brown dwarf. So let's talk about a brown dwarf. So what is a brown dwarf? Well, a brown dwarfs are substellar objects that occupy the mass range between the heaviest gas giant planets and the lightest stars. So they would be anywhere from 13 Jupiters to about 75 to 80 Jupiter masses. Below this range, there's called sub-brown dwarfs, and above it are the lightest red dwarfs. And brown dwarfs may be fully convective with no layers or chemical differentiation by depth. So let's look at that. Brown dwarfs may be fully convective. It means that there's heat in there. There's infrared heat. It gives off heat, but not enough heat like a sun-like star where there is nuclear fusion. So stars like our sun, if you call it a star, it's in the main sequence. So the main sequence is it's where it spends most of its time in its lifetime, where it's fusing hydrogen or helium or something like that. So brown dwarfs are not massive enough to sustain nuclear fusion of ordinary hydrogen to helium in their cores. So that's where the fusion occurs. There's enough mass in a star to squeeze things together with a mutual attraction of gravity, and the pressure goes up, so there's lots of pressure, and that raises the temperature, and poof, at about 10 million degrees or something like that, it's hot enough for fusion. So helium is made when hydrogen is fused. It's a four-part process. It's called the proton-proton chain. But brown dwarfs are thought to fuse deuterium, which is two hydrogens. So helium, you need four hydrogens to make one helium. And deuterium, you need two hydrogens. Or to fuse lithium if their mass is above a debated threshold of 13 Jupiter masses. It is also debated whether brown dwarfs were better defined by their formation processes rather than their supposed nuclear fusion reactions. Okay, so stars are categorized by spectral class, with brown dwarfs designated at types M, L, T, and Y. Despite their name, brown dwarfs are of different colors. Many brown dwarfs would likely appear magenta to the human eye. So what's magenta? Like a reddish brown, or possibly orange red? Brown dwarfs are not very luminous at visible wavelength. Planets are known to orbit some brown dwarfs. So here's an example. 2M1207b. Now, is that the brown dwarf or is that the planet? I guess that's the brown dwarf. Let's see. I'll click it and I'll try to find out. Then there's MOA2007BLG192LB. Okay, so I'm going to go to 2M1207b. 2M1207b is a planetary mass object orbiting the brown dwarf 2M1207. In the constellation Centaurus, approximately 170 light years from Earth. It is one of the first candidate exoplanets to be directly observed by infrared imaging. So remember, we don't see in infrared, we only see invisible light. It was discovered in April 2004 by the Very Large Telescope at the Paranal Observatory in Chile by a team from the European Southern Observatory. It is believed to be from 3 to 10 times the mass of Jupiter and may orbit 2M1207 at a distance roughly as far as the brown dwarf as Pluto is from the subject, from the Sun. The object is a very hot gas giant. The estimated surface temperature is 16 degrees Kelvin, mostly due to gravitational contraction. Okay, so we're looking at brown dwarfs today. So brown dwarfs are substellar objects that didn't have enough mass to form into a star. So if an object, let's say a star forms, it's because there was enough mass for the, let's say, give an example of a cloud. So we see a cloud in the sky. Now imagine out in space, there's a cloud of gas and dust. It gets more and more massive, more dust gathers, more gas gathers, and it could be a shockwave from a nearby supernova or something would cause it to start collapsing in on itself. So the stuff collapses in on itself and it wants to squish itself to the point. To a point. That's what black holes do. It squishes everything to a point. But if a sun-sized star, there's not enough mass to make a black hole. But anyway, it will try to squish itself to a point. All the gravity, all the particles are attracting each other. They're squishing each other. They're squishing the whole mass. And temperature rises because the pressure is rising. And poof, we have a star. So that's how our sun was born. Now, let's look at this brown dwarf that was discovered by the NASA-funded Citizen Science Project. That sounds pretty cool. A brown dwarf. Well, they should call it a magenta dwarf or a red-orange dwarf because it's not really brown. But anyway, Jupiter can be looked at in one way as a failed star, maybe Saturn as well. So if Jupiter had something like 15 to 80 times the mass that it has now, it could have formed into a star because it could have had enough mass, so everything attracts and it starts squishing itself and it gets so hot it ignites it. Nuclear fusion begins. So let's look at this article. It's from technology.org. It's probably one in NASA too, but I'm trying to spice it up and I'm looking at technology.org sometimes. So it's www.technology.org, and it was posted yesterday, which is July 19th. So the name of the article is NASA-funded Citizen Science Project discovers new brown dwarf. Here goes the article. One night, 3 months ago, Rosa Castro finished her dinner, opened her laptop, and uncovered a novel object that was neither planet nor star. Therapist by day and amateur astronomer by night, Castro joined the NASA-funded Backyard Worlds Planet 9 Citizen Science Project. So this project began in February of this year. Not knowing she would become one of four volunteers to help identify the project's first brown dwarf, formerly known as WISEA J110125.95 plus 540052.8. It's hard to remember, isn't it? So the illustration here that I have in front of me, this illustration shows the average brown dwarf. It's much smaller than our sun and low mass stars and only slightly larger than the planet Jupiter. So again, we could look at Jupiter as a failed star. If it had more mass, like let's say 15, it could have 15 times more mass, so 15 Jupiters, it could have maybe ignited and become a star. So we would have two stars in our solar system. Wouldn't that be cool? Okay, back to the article. After devoting hours to skimming online, just wait, I'm going to interrupt the article. So what NASA does, it gets this data and it needs volunteers to comb through the data. And this project, people, I guess, can contact them and they can comb through all the data and see what they find. So after devoting hours to skimming online, publicly available flipbooks containing time-lapse images, Rosa Castro spotted a moving object unlike any other. The search process involves fixating on countless colorful dots. When an object is different, it simply stands out. Castro, who describes herself as extremely detail-oriented, has contributed nearly 100 classifications to this specific project. A paper about the new brown dwarf was published on May 24th in the Astrophysical Journal Letters. Four citizen scientists are co-authors of the paper, including Castro. Since then, Backyard Worlds, Planet 9, has identified roughly 117 additional brown dwarf candidates. Now I'm going to pause for this article for a sec. Imagine volunteering for something like that and actually finding something and you can name it, like our most famous Michelle Kunimoto did. So let's take a break, and when we come back we're going to talk more about this brown dwarf. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.
Last night, I left the bar. I was thirsty, and I don't drink wine. I was desperate. I needed blood. I turned to the only place I could. The only place that could possibly help me.
Hello, Canadian Blood Services.
Hello. I need some blood. A. Positive or negative, it doesn't matter.
I'm sorry, we're all out of A positive and negative. Would you like some O instead?
No. No, that won't do. Thank you. Good night. Save me. Save yourself. Give blood. Voluntarily.
This message was brought to you courtesy of the Canadian Blood Services and CITR Radio 101.9 FM.
Marco on Astro Talk on CITR 101.9 FM.
Welcome back. We were talking about brown dwarfs. Now, wouldn't that be great to be accredited with something like that? So, when I first started being an astronomer many years ago, I would so excited every night I'd bring my telescope into the backyard and just spend hours and hours doing this kind of stuff. And it was so much fun. It was so interesting. But after a while, it's harder and harder to pull yourself, get your telescope, set it up, and look into the sky, because you got to pull out your telescope, set it up, and you got to put it back. And looking is sometimes frustrating. Okay, so one thing I wanted to do was, they keep talking about this Goddard Space Center in Maryland, so I was going to look out, who's Goddard? Okay, Goddard is a guy who, of course he's a guy. Robert is a guy's name. He was born October 1882, passed away August 1945. Robert Hutching Goddard was an American engineer, professor, physicist, and inventor who is credited with creating and building the world's first liquid fuel rocket. Goddard successfully launched his model on March 16, 1926, ushering a new era of space flight and innovation. He and his team launched 34 rockets between 1926 and 1941, achieving altitudes as high as 2.6 kilometers and speeds as fast as 885 kilometers per hour. Goddard's work as both theorist and engineer anticipated many of the developments that were to make space flight possible. He has been called the man who ushered in the space age. Two of Goddard's 214 patented inventions, a multi-stage rocket, 1914, and a liquid fuel rocket, 1914, were important milestones toward space flight. So that's who Goddard is. I kept mentioning the Goddard Space Flight Center, and I never knew what it was. So now I think I know. Okay, so back to the article about a brown dwarf. So brown dwarfs, again, are substellar objects that occupy the mass range between the heaviest gas giant planets and the lightest stars, of approximately 13 to 80 Jupiter masses. So if Jupiter was 15 times its size, it might have ignited fusion and become a small star. Okay, so back to the article. This is about a NASA-funded citizen science project that discovers a new brown dwarf. It's part of the NASA-funded Backyards Worlds Planet 9, where the aim was to discover Planet 9. They think there's another planet beyond Pluto, so they're looking for it. So let's go back to the article. A paper about the new brown dwarf was published on May 24th in the Astrophysical Journal. The project, backyard world, Planet Nine, has identified roughly 117 additional brown dwarf candidates. The collaboration was inspired by the recently proposed ninth planet, possibly orbiting at the fringes of our solar system beyond Pluto. Now I'm going to read a quote, and so says lead researcher Mark Kuchner, an astrophysicist at NADRDS at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland. End quote. We realized we could do a much better job identifying Planet Nine if we open the search to the public. Along the way, we're hoping to find thousands of interesting brown dwarfs. Wow, that's interesting, yes. It's been roughly two decades since researchers first discovered brown dwarfs, and the scientific community opened its eyes to this new class of objects between stars and planets. Although they are as common as stars and form in much the same way, brown dwarfs lack the mass necessary to sustain nuclear fusion reactions. They therefore do not have the energy to maintain the luminosity, so they slowly cool over the course of their lifetimes. Their low temperatures also render them intrinsically dim. And here I scoured earlier and it says brown dwarfs give off radiation in the infrared. So now there's a photo here and I'm going to read the caption. The newly discovered brown dwarf WISE A J110125.95 plus 54052.8 appears as a moving dot, indicated by the circle, in this animated flipbook from the Backyard World Planet 9 Citizen Science Project. So, let's look at this name, WISE A. So, then it's J110125.95 plus 54052.8. I think that somehow describes its location in the star by astronomical coordinates. Okay. I think I've read it before, but I don't, offhand, don't remember how declination or whatever. I won't go there. Okay. Back to the article. For years, Kuchner has been fascinated by infrared images of the entire sky captured by NASA's Wide Field Infrared Survey Explorer. Therefore, the acronym WISE, W-I-S-E. W is Wide Field, I is Infrared, S is Survey, E Explorer, launched in 2009. Just like I said, NASA has so many spacecraft out there and telescopes. The Space Telescope is specifically designed to observe cold objects emitting light at long wavelengths, objects like brown dwarfs. With its initial mission complete, WISE was deactivated in 2011. It was then reactivated in 2013 as NEOWISE, a new mission funded by the NEO Observations Program with a different goal, to search for potentially hazardous near-Earth objects, NEO, or near-Earth objects. Previously, Kuchner had focused on stationary objects seen by WISE, but the Backyard World Planet 9 project shows the WISE and NEOWISE data in a way custom-tailored for finding fast-moving objects. His team layers many images of the same location to create a simple, comprehensive snapshot. These are then combined with several similarly co-added pictures to form flipbooks that show motion over time. Anyone with internet access can scour these flipbooks and click on anomalies. If they would like to call the science team attention to an object they found, they can submit a report to the researchers or share their insights on a public forum. Kuchner and his colleagues then follow up the best candidates using ground-based telescopes to glean more information. According to Backyard World Planet 9 citizen science Dan Castledon, participants are free to dig as deep into the results as they choose. A security researcher by trade, Castledon developed a series of tools allowing fellow participants to streamline their searches and visualize their results, as well as aggregate various user statistics. He also helped identify several of the additional brown dwarf candidates while the first discovery was being confirmed. Kuchner and his co-author Adam Schneider of Arizona State University, Tempe, agree WISE A J110125.95 plus 54052.8 is an exciting discovery for several reasons. And quote, What's special about this object, besides the way it was discovered, is that it's unusually faint. That means our citizen scientists are probing deeper than anyone has before, and end quote. While computers efficiently sift through deluges of data, they can also get lost in details that human eyes and brains easily disregard as irrelevant. However, mining this information is extremely arduous for a single scientist or even a small group of researchers. That's precisely why collaborating with an enthusiastic public is so effective. Many eyes catch details that one pair alone could miss. While Kuchner is delighted by this early discovery, his ultimate goal for backyard worlds, Planet 9, is to find the smallest and coldest brown dwarfs called Y dwarfs. Some of these Y dwarfs may even be lurking closer to us than Proxima Centauri, the nearest star to the Sun. Their low temperatures make Y dwarfs extremely dim, according to Adam Burgasser at the University of California and San Diego. And quote, they're so faint that it takes quite a bit of work to pull them from the images. That's where Kuchner's project will help immensely. Anytime you get a diverse set of people looking at the data, they'll bring together unique perspectives that can lead to unexpected discoveries. And end quote. Kuchner anticipates the Backyard Worlds effort will continue for several more years, allowing more volunteers like Castleton and Castro to contribute. As Castro put it, quote, I am not a professional. I'm just an amateur astronomer appreciating the night sky. If I see something odd, I'll admire and enjoy it, end quote. And believe me, when you first start with your telescope and people keep doing it, but I've stopped, it's amazing. You look at something in the sky that's so far away, and it's just a thrill. So Backyard World Planet 9 is a collaboration between NASA, UC Berkeley, the American Museum of Natural History in New York, Arizona State University, the Space Telescope Science Institute in Baltimore, and something called Zooniverse, a collaboration of scientists, software developers, and educators who collectively develop imagined science citizen projects on the internet. Now, isn't that cool? Something called Zooniverse. So here it is, www.zooniverse.org. So it's Zooniverse. I'm going to look at that. Okay, there's something, our featured project called the Milky Way Project. So thank you for listening. We're going to continue next week. And there was an interesting article I saw on technology.org. It's got a really cool photo of the Earth, I guess, and all these crazy helixes of electrons images. And it says, space is not empty, nor is it silent. While technically a vacuum, space nonetheless contains energetic charged particles governed by magnetic fields and electric field, and it behaves unlike anything we experience on Earth. That is a cool article. I wish I could have time to read it today, but I don't. So thank you for listening. You've been listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.